The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Now, my next guest has skied on tough Austrian slopes, cycled thousands of kilometres across the US and Australia, scaled Everest as far as base camp, and climbed to the peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. He has done all of these despite the fact that he is blind. Robert Dowdle, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
And you're very welcome this morning, Robert. And as I said, you put most people to shame, given all you've done. First of all, take us back to that fateful night 20 years ago and tell us what happened.
It was September 89, the 11th of September, talking about 9/11. But I was working in the local pub, the Penny and Black, and I'd missed my 18th due to the fact that I was working. So myself and my friend Dermot and two girls, Sandra Cavan and Susanna Bryan, we went out just to go out, you know, somewhere different. And we headed up, you're familiar with, I'm sure, Blessington.
Indeed.
And coming home, we decided to take the back road down over Bannascarney. And I remember my mother warning us actually going out because she said, look, beware that there's a massive fog coming in over the Tallaght Mountains. But, you know, you don't pay any heed to that when you're a youngster. So I took the back roads anyway, and seemingly it was like the hedge cutters had been out that evening, were cutting the ditch, and it was very, very, very foggy. Now, it wasn't that we were driving, Dermot was driving reckless, and no way, just that, you know, at 17, you're a bit, you know, you think you're invincible. But then we hit the ditch, and the glass, it was the old type glass, the one that you shatter, and that came in top of me, so I was more or less blind instantly.
Mm.
That was it.
And can you remember the few days in the wake of what happened?
I remember that night being rushed to the hospital. And the first thing I remember was coming to, and the nurse and doctor had the nurses had put tinfoil around me. And I remember my mother coming through and saying, "Let it's wrapped around you for shock." Then I remember, the next thing I remember was the following morning, they rushed me to the Eye and Ear. And it's only when it came to, I realised how serious it was, because there was a priest praying over us, giving us last rites. And then the next thing I remember was coming out of the operation, and because I was under a theatre for about 8-9 hours, they had to give me another anaesthetic to bring me down slowly because my muscles went into such spasm. But then I came to again, and there was people around me. I couldn't say that I knew instantly that I was blind. You know, your mind shut down. We have a mechanism to shut down. Mm. I didn't, for weeks, I didn't, you know, really face into it at all.
It didn't register with
you at all? Didn't register at all.
Yeah. No. Now, when then, because in the period after you were made blind, in that accident, that car accident, you felt very down. Was there a lot of self-pity going on?
No, believe it or not. If anything, people were amazed because I was very charismatic. I was, I think it was my way of coping, that for weeks, months, I was laughing, joking. I'd say it only hit me, like the accident in September. And for an April, I wanted to know, okay, what is the story? Like, let me know. And he gave it to me bluntly, like, well, there's nothing more we can do for you. And yes, I knew deep down that there wasn't, but I wanted to know. I wanted to, you know, get a final statement. Like, this is it. Nail in the coffin. And that's when it shocked my mother. So my mother and father asked for a second opinion, went to England to a Dr. McLeod, and he said, no, basically there was nothing they could do for me. Because it wasn't just the front of the eye that was gone, it was the optic nerve. And it's bluntly, he said, the only way you'll see again is if we can do a brain transplant.
Right.
So that's impossible, yeah.
Yeah. So what was your life then like in the wake of being blind? When did you start realising that being blind mightn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world?
I trained here for a while in England, in Ireland, and the mobility in that I needed something more intense. So my doctor again, Dr. Peter Barry, he reckoned, brilliant doctor by the way, he recommended I go to England. I needed something that every day, something intense, because I was 18, I wasn't going to slow down. This was not going to best me. That's the way I realised then. Like, if anything, I attacked it in a confrontational sense, you know? So I put the emotional side apart. The emotional side only hit me about 10 years later, but I wanted to make it. This is a physical challenge for me. I wanted to beat this. And I'd say the biggest casualty when I lost my sight was losing my independence, so I wanted that back. So I went to England where I'd done cane training, which I loved. That's where I got my love for, my passion for wood turning. What else did I do? Daily living skills. I spent 4 months over there where I really got stuck into getting my independence back.
Mm.
I began to realise, yeah, you know, this is not too bad.
And you were in a relationship there as well, which your mother didn't necessarily approve of.
No, she didn't. The woman was, you'd say slightly older. She was my mobility officer.
And she was part of the operation there at Torquay.
And again, that's another casualty. Like, when you're 18, you're suddenly, like, these are the times you're going out with the lads, having the crack, meeting girls. And I'm not saying that girls at 18 were immature, but I hadn't got the maturity to see beyond that. So, and
they used to come here looking for advice, not necessarily to for anything intimate.
Yeah. I became an agony aunt overnight, yeah. All the girls used to come around to me and looking for advice. But like going to nightclubs, it's not a place for blind people to meet a girl. You know, definitely not.
So you met the mobility officer in Turkey.
God, I hope she's done listening.
She was twice your age.
She was twice my age. And she seemed beyond the blindness. And if anything, it was a brilliant friendship first. She brought me on myself emotionally, big time. Let go. Like, she dropped a lot of baggage with me. Because at 18, being blinded, I'd never be with a girl again. You know, the type of attitude.
Yeah.
And for the first time in 3 years, yeah, I must admit, I did fall in love with her, yeah.
You did fall in love. Yeah. Your mother wasn't impressed, though.
No. What mother would be? Like, you know, that's a typical Irish mother. I wouldn't say my mother was any different.
Well, how did she find out?
My sisters, yeah.
Told her.
They told her. And again, they were concerned too.
But how important was that for you, that relationship? Did that again help you
realise it? Was amazingly, like, how do you say? Yeah, in an emotional sense, it really brought me forward, you know? I began to believe in myself again. So yeah, of course. It was great fun. I'm not going to tell you now. I'm not going to go into detail how fun it was, but anyway. But it was brilliant. She got me driving, believe it or not. She was the first one to get me behind the wheel of a car. It was brilliant on the beach. So, it was good.
It was a good period in your life. So, you just say it took you 10 years to adjust to your new life. Is that what you said?
It only hit me emotionally about 10 years later. Mm. Absolutely. Because the challenges were all over. Like, I got my independence back. And suddenly, wham, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Where am I going from here? Like, where did I fit in society? You know? Very much, yeah.
And then you decided that there was nothing stopping you from doing certain things?
God, no. No. I remember the first time I joined Blind Sports, and there was these two people, I still remember them, Paula and Gus Dorrington, lovely couple, they're blind themselves, and they were going about skiing, and I thought, what? You're joking, you know? I thought they were messing first, and it was them that told me about the NCBI doing a ski trip with the Lord Wrestling Jerry Ryan Show and Brendan Donoghue, and so I got on board and I went, and David Norris was there.
Tell us about that experience on the ski slopes.
I remember the first time I went up, like, typical. I was disgusted because there was another three visually impaired, and they got stunning looking blondes, Austrian bombshells, you know. I get this geriatric.
How did you know they were stunning looking?
You just know by them, you know. You can feel by them.
Okay.
Not that I felt them. Energy in that. But I got this. The only way to describe him, he was ancient dragon. I called him. You know, he could barely walk. Now that's how bad his arthritis was. And I remember going up in the slope, and he says, "Robert, okay, you're going to hold the poles, and I go. You go behind me." I'm like, yeah, right, Jane. This is going to be boring. But he shot off like a bat out of hell. And I swear to you, I honestly thought it was somebody else stood in this place. He was amazing. And it was the ride of my life. It was unbelievable.
And what was that like? What was that? Was it scary? It must have been
absolutely
very scary.
Because I knew, now, you know, you don't rationalise things. Like, I knew he was powerful, extremely strong for a man in his late 60s, early 70s. But I remember going down that slope and I said to myself, if I let go, I'm a goner. I'm an absolute goner, you know. Mm. But when I got down, Brendan Dunne, who had a brandy for me and a cigarette, and I don't even smoke, which is here, take that. But it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And the guys thinking about it, I'll give you a good laugh now. My uncle, who was with me, he described, Robert, do you know what you came down? I'm like, no. So he described the place up in Ballinascore, and he called it Breaks. It's actually called the Breaks, like that's how steep it is. And he said, multiply that by 10. Went back up that evening, and suddenly I could visualise it. I had to go down on my bum. I could not go down it. Because it's weird that, yeah, I had an image of it in my head and I wasn't going back down, no way.
And not only have you been skiing, but you've been cycling thousands of miles across the United States in tandem with a sighted person.
Yeah. The first guy I went with was Theo, and the second guy was Thomas Corcoran, two very, very good friends of mine.
And you've climbed the peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. That must have been a buzz.
It was a buzz, but I'd say of them all, that was the hardest challenge I ever had. Because it's a freestanding mountain, you're not up and down like the Himalayas. You're just up, 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 up. And we done it in 4 days. And yeah, it was tough.
And there was a lot of celebrating when you got to the top.
Absolutely. And when we got back down. The big celebration was when we got back down. The Sherpas, the guides, like they were singing. And I just knew they were paying homage to me and the mountain. And I felt so humbled and a part of it. It was just unreal. They put me on their shoulders and... Yeah, there was a few tears shed that night, all right.
Mm. And you're not stopping there. There's plenty more things that you have on your list of to-do things.
I'm hoping to. Like, I went out walking yesterday. I'm sure you're familiar with Glenismole. So I walked from my place in Tallaght up to Glenismole up the Bog Road, about 16, 17 mile. And I'm hoping to do the marathon now, come October.
Mm. And how would you say, how would you describe your life, the quality of your life now, Robert?
Yeah, the book, believe it or not, when I started writing the book, it brought back a lot of memories. I wouldn't say issues as much as pains that I hadn't closed. And if anything, it's done a lot of healing, a tremendous amount.
What pains are you talking about?
If anything, people from the past, they didn't have, like, one thing I always say to people, I'm blind, you know, so what? And I love to get that across to people. Like, I had a disability, people, family, close friends, they didn't know how to treat me for so long. And if anything, I think this book is going to build a bit of a bridge there.
Mm.
You know, like my nephews, nieces, my uncle's children, they didn't. And like, I remember being at the launch and I thought, well, that's what it does, brilliant. My two nephews came up to me and he's like, I didn't know granny smoked. Was that a big secret and all this? And my granddad had been losing his teeth on the mountain. And to hear from their perspective through my eyes, I thought, wow, brilliant.
Mm. But you've said also, you say also in the book that in some ways it was a blessing that you became blind.
Because I'd have never done the things I'd have done. I'd be still probably working in the local pub. Who knows, married with 5-6 kids, who knows? Not saying that's not great, but I have done things that I knew that, well, I wouldn't have done if I was outside it. No way.
Mm. And but you've been down. There have been times when you've been down about...
Oh, yeah. Believe it or not, depression only hit me really big. I was in Madagascar 3 years ago, and two things happened. Like, here I'm a physical therapist, and I slipped 2 discs in my own back and not been able to walk. But I was doing jungle trekking there, about 15 miles every day. Didn't sleep at night. Hadn't slept for about 4 weeks. Came home very depressed. Got a serious tummy bug. And suddenly, with the book, the whole lot, bang, it all caved into me. Once and for all. Just, like, 20 years, it finally hit me only, as I said, 3 years ago. Massively. The doctors put me on antidepressants. Some of them agreed with me, some of them didn't agree with me. But I really, how I pulled myself out, I really believe to fight depression is to find your passion in life. And mine was singing. I love it, writing the book as well. But I joined the choir with your sisters in, chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And that really lifted me out of it. Unbelievably so.
Why?
Because I love singing. It was just the people that, like six, plus there's 600 women and only 40 guys. Maybe that's another reason. But yeah. It's singing is so uplifting. It's amazing. The people there, they were just beautiful.
Mm.
Beautiful. And as I said, then the finishing of the book, that lifted me out. It was finally finished. I could not put it to rest, but I could put a load of old feelings to rest.
Mm.
Yeah.
So as they say, it was cathartic in some respects.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is there any anger there about the life you've had, about the life you might have had if you hadn't been in that car that night, that fateful night back in 1989?
I can honestly say no. If you had asked me that maybe 15 years ago, yeah. Like, I would have had a few anger issues, but now, no. Mm. No whatsoever.
And you'd say that you've been onionised. Explain that word. You use it in the book.
The only way to describe it's like been peeled back. You know, bit by bit by bit by bit. And yeah, definitely. Mm. By God, there was nights I was laughing writing that book. And I hope that's what it does say to the reader. Like, I had a friend the other day, she says, feck your enemy, Robbie Dowdle. She says, you're after. I'm out in the back garden. There's tears flowing down my face. It's a book. It's a roller coaster. Because that's what my life was, in all seriousness.
And you're training also to be an acupuncturist. Tell us about
that. I'm in my second year.
And how do you do that? How difficult is that for a blind man?
It's easier than the actual massage course, because believe it or not, when I was doing massage, I remember coming up against a lot of closed doors, and eventually John Sharkey and signed him out. He's very good. He were sitting there one day and he says, how are we going to learn this, Robbie? So I'm there, geez, how will I learn? So we come up with an idea that when he is teaching, I'd be the guinea pig on the plinth. So he'd say, oh, here's the calf muscle, here's such and such and such, you know? And bang, that's how we came up with it. Acupuncture, it's constant repetition. The teacher's Vincent Carroll, brilliant teacher, and he's a Western medic as well. So we're combining Western and Eastern. And again, there's plenty in the class, and they just say, Robbie, here's spleen 6, point it down to just above your ankle. And... like, we work as a combination, the whole class.
Mm.
And they're a brilliant, brilliant bunch in the class.
And you're heading off to Penang in Malaysia for a month as
hopefully,
part of your course.
Yeah, that's the plan. Like, it's optional, and yes, I'll definitely do it.
Right.
Because you won't get better experience than in Vietnam.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been great having you in this morning, Robert.
Thank you, John.
Continued success in all your ventures. The book is called Beyond the Darkness, and I'd say for anybody with an infirmity, it's well worth reading. Is there plans to do more?
Yeah, I'm hoping to do a fictional book eventually.
Okay, right. But I suppose you've plenty of experiences to go on.
Thank you.